watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Televi, and joining me to take your questions this evening are Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth and Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Graham, Nick, good to see you both here this evening. Nick, if I may start with you, not a great finish for the JSE today. And July is drawing to a close. I mean, it hasn't been the best of months. It hasn't been the worst of months either, though, to be perfectly honest. And it's quite nice to see the Rand coming back to the 1680s. Do you think that was maybe one of the factors behind some of the weakness that you saw in the market today?
Yeah, evening to you both. I think so. I think definitely a little bit of that. And then also coming off the back of a really, really good week. I think 4.5% up for the JSE All Share last week, so not too shabby. And despite the shock, in inverted commas, shock interest rate rise that we had as well. So, you know, I expected to get a little bit back today, but I think you're right, Juliet. A little bit of Rand strength coming through, knocking those Rand hedges a little bit, and maybe a little bit of a pause ahead of what's going to be a monster decision by the Fed on Wednesday night after our close. So all eyes on that. And slap bang in the middle of earnings season too. So lots to digest. And I suppose giving a little bit back after a really good week last week.
Graham, do you think that Fed decision, is going to have any real impact on the market? As Nick said, you had those monster inflation numbers that came out last week, and then, you know, the market kind of took it in its stride. The market knows that the Fed has to raise interest rates. Is it going to brush it off, do you think?
Well, I think at the moment the market is sort of bracing itself for 75 now, and then probably, 75, and, maybe in total we get another, 200, 250. Market's a little unsure when they're going to, are they going to front load, or are they going to sort of try and smooth it out? I think they're going to front load. But the reality is all of us know that that's not going to have much of an effect, because a lot of this is cost push. And so they're going to be hitting the brakes hard to try and curb inflation, but it's not going to have a massive effect, I don't think, on inflation, at least on the, over the next 6 to 9 months. So that's probably what the market is really trying to get its head around, is if they hit the brakes hard now, great. We all assume that they'll then sort of take a breath, late in this year. I'm not sure that's going to happen. So I think that's what's really upsetting the market, is inflation's out of control. Bond yields are still not where they used to be, and the Fed fund rate's not where it used to be. So we're still in uncharted territory.
Yeah, and of course, to some extent, it helps the dollar strengthen, and you're starting to see people fretting, company executives. American companies, big multinationals, it's starting to impact their financials. And I wonder, is that just something that we have to live with? They have to live with? It's a strong dollar, or does it dramatically influence our investment decisions if we've been, in the past few years, been buying U.S. companies or big multinational companies? Nick, do we scale back a bit because the strong dollar is going to hurt them, or do you just have to think, these currency fluctuations are part and parcel of being a multinational business, and you have to accept them?
So I think obviously if you've got a global portfolio or macro portfolio and you're investing, the single most important thing I think is the dollar. And I think other than just these multinationals that are feeling the pinch, I think this dollar is going to be I don't think you can underestimate what a big decision it is for investors. It's going to affect everything. It's going to affect your cost. It's the reserve currency of choice in the world. All our commodities in South Africa are denominated in dollars. Of course, the oil price as well, dollars. And you allude to the fact that I think it was Netflix out on Friday with news how much their subscribers are going to be hit by overseas subscribers because of obviously with a stronger dollar. I think it's a big concern. I really, really do. And I think the FT ran a front page story about it today as well, which you might be referring to. It is a concern. And it is going to affect them. There's no doubt about it. Despite the fact the S&P 500, a lot of the companies from the S&P 500 earn their money from abroad. I think it's one of the single most important decisions now is watch this dollar. It's going to affect everything. I can't be more sanguine about it. It's a big thing.
Yeah. Okay. Graham, is it just one toxic stew out there? You've got strong dollar. You've got a relentless Federal Reserve, rampant inflation. You feel like giving up now?
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at Janet Yellen saying she doesn't see a massive risk of recession, I'm not entirely sure I agree with that. I think at least technically we probably are going to experience a few tough quarters. But you know, the American economy is still strong. But I think, as Nick says, I think the real problem we've got, Jules, your question is how are American companies experiencing it? But the reality is, and as Nick alluded, you know, whether a company is listed in New York or in London or in Frankfurt, the reality is they make their money all over the world. They often manufacture all over the world. So you've got kind of moving parts for currency. I think the US listeds are probably going to experience a lot more dollar strength pressure than the rest of them, but it's a global problem. Mm. I think what we're seeing now is for me, it's like the big PE unraveling. So where US companies were trading on, you know, often 50, 60% PE multiple premium to the rest of the world, you're seeing that unravel. And I think the point that I'm trying to make is that US companies will experience that more. But okay. I think to your point, we're in a scenario, I think, where US companies are really going to battle. Input costs are coming through, and they're going to battle, I think, in large part to push those onto consumers. So, you know, if you look at the forward on the S&P 500, I think you had 17.5, and the historic is around the 19 and a bit. So the market still thinks there's earnings momentum. I'm not entirely sure I agree with that, and I think that could be the thing that sort of catches us all off guard later in the year.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's discuss some of the stock pick, or the questions that have come through in various shares, and maybe we'll get to Amplat's results at some point a little bit later. There's one question on Bidcorp, and you know, if we speak about broad companies with, you know, multinational focus, Bidcorp is certainly one of those. And the question is, I'd appreciate the panel's view on Bidcorp at these levels and their prospects moving forward. Nick, I would have thought, notwithstanding all the difficulties that they have to encounter, they're in the services business and there's a lot of demand for restaurants and, possibly not office cleaning to the same extent maybe of, you know, 3 years ago. Mm. But do you think Bidcorp's quite well placed?
I do. I'm a little bit cautious on Bidcorp. I think it's, you know, it's sort of had its moment. I don't know if I'd put it in the sort of the sector of a consumer cyclical. It's not really, but yet again, you know, they are in a space where rising interest rates probably will affect them. You know, how many times do you want your office clean? You got how many times you're going to cut back? It's not one of those ones that's recession proof, I don't think. And also looking at where the space they play in, certainly United Kingdom as well, you know, that sterling is going to get more and more. I see the governor out with some very stern words, I think on over the weekend, saying, you know, they can expect inflation getting 12, 13, 14%. So I do think things like Bidcorp, as much as they're not in that sort of high growth space, they're going to get affected too. Mm. So I think it's probably full at these levels is the long answer.
Yeah. Graham, actually, I mean, if we pull up that chart again, so it's over a year, it's actually astonishingly volatile. I wouldn't have expected that. So it shows that maybe I haven't been keeping my eyes closely focused on Bidcorp over the last year. But for a company that's regarded as a blue chip, and you tend to assume certain characteristics of it, that's a very, very volatile share price performance over 12 months. It probably doesn't look that much less volatile going back a little bit further. What do you make of what's going on there?
Well, Juliette, I think it would be quite useful to bring up a five-year chart because that'll give you a slightly different picture. And I think Bidcorp invests some of the sort of scenarios. I think Bidcorp is an incredibly well-run business, but it's quite narrowly focused, I would say, sort of in the food services space. And we saw what COVID did to them. And that might be some of the reason for some of the price volatility. But I think there are lots of, let's call it, structural shifts taking place in their market. You know, if you look at you know, the emergence of eat from home and, you know, people not going out for dinners as much as they used to. And I think it's having quite a profound effect. But my sense is it's a really good business, but it's quite narrowly focused. If you look at their more recent update, talking about challenging conditions, getting their hands on product. Of course, food inflation is going to hurt them. So, you know, if I look at that share price over the last few years, I've been sort of, you know, drumming my fingers, waiting for a buying opportunity, and I've waited for quite a long time. If you look now, I think the market's a little bit too optimistic on the earnings forecasts to June 23. But for me, you know, we're suddenly getting into the realm because of the underperformance, let's call it, over a period of time, where if you can get this thing, which I believe is probably in hard currency, late single digits, maybe early double digits, and in Rand a little bit better than that, probably on balance of argument, you know, you can justify a 15 multiple. So we're sort of starting to get into that phase. But I think global growth, you know, the China story, input cost pressures and disposable income under pressure probably doesn't augur well. But I think it's one to definitely keep an eye on, maybe you and I both, a little bit closer than we have, because I think it is a very good business in spite of the fact that it's quite narrowly focused and supremely well run. I think that's the other thing.
Yeah, but the five-year chart isn't particularly pretty either. Nick, I wonder what you make of Bidvest, because actually, you know, the assumption was that Bidcorp was going to be the winner, you know, especially when they split, and it was going to be Bidvest that struggled. And yet, actually, certainly over the last 2 years, Bidvest was the stock that you wanted to back rather than Bidcorp, interestingly enough. Would you be a buyer of Bidvest, or, you know, it's very South African focused, although it is kind of diversifying. It's, you know, did a big deal in the UK recently. What do you make of, you know, of that part of the Bid group?
I think it is the same as what I said about Bidcorp. Obviously, a slightly different business, but in a similar space. I think, you know, these type of businesses, as sort of solid as they are, and Graham's right, fantastically run businesses. And often in this particular case, you look at companies like this that are not high growth. You want to buy the management. The management are brilliant. But, I just struggle to see where you're going to get sort of returns outside of with inflation rising. You know, South African inflation north of 7%. Look, it's not going to, we hope it's not going to sit there. But are you going to get 7-9% return in a Bidvest? I struggle to see it. You're going to get a little bit of dividend flow. They do pay a dividend. They pay quite a bit out. But I don't think it's going to be a massive outperformer. And that is my concern. And I think I'll join both of you. I think we need to be patient on both these shares. Keep an eye on them, but they're maybe not quite at the levels yet. I'd much rather pick them up at lower multiples or lower valuations.
Yeah. Graham, very quickly before we go to the break, I mean, is your same assessment for you for Bidvest, or do you have a slightly different take?
No, I think Bidvest, the problem is they've just got such a strong presence in so many markets. They really are dominant. It's difficult for them to do sort of bolt-on acquisitions. So I think out of the two, I actually prefer Bidcorp as a business. But I think Bidvest is maybe, because of the diversity, is maybe a little bit more defensive. But if you can get Bidcorp on the right multiple, I'd rather on a five-year view hold Bidcorp.
There's a question on Grindrod Shipping. The view on Grindrod Shipping, it's had a good pullback. Nick, if I can start with you. Grindrod Shipping, actually, and what is it? Tex Dana were pandemic winners. but it has, Grindrod Shipping's had a bit of a pullback. Do you think it's worth getting into?
I'd probably refer to your five-year chart at this point, because you say a bit of a pullback. I think this was around about 40 Rand a share in the depths of COVID, and it's now 300. So I think the viewer, just have a little look on Google Map, Google Charts, whatever you look at. It had a little pullback, agreed, but it's had a huge bounce back from the depths of what it was. In fact, was close to 10 bagger at one point. I mean, it's a great business. I mean, it really is, and it's a simple, stupid business. You know, it's they lease out these shipping rates, Unicorn Shipping as well, or Unicorn Freight does all the oil tankers as well. They do Cape Size, they do all different various sizes. So overall, I really like the business, but it's very, very cyclical, and shipping always is. And a good shipping team times it well when they order their ships, when they lease them out, when they buy them at the bottom, when they get them built in time. It's far more complicated on the buying side than you'd think, but very cyclical. So I like the business. Has it pulled back enough? I'm not sure. I mean, keep an eye on the Baltic Dry Index. It's also pulled back quite a bit. I don't think Grindrod Shipping has come back enough as it should have done given relative to what the Baltic Dry has done.
Okay.
And again, it is cyclical. If we are heading into a global slowdown, and I'm also erring a little bit on Graham's side when you're talking about a recession, I think we're probably already in one globally. We don't know it yet. Therefore, something like a Grindrod Shipping would not be where you want to be. So like the business, but I think the viewer should be greedy, hang around a little bit longer. You might get a lower price. But at the moment, I don't think it's come back. And I don't think it's reflecting the world slowing down enough.
Okay.
But as I say, not taken away from the fact that it's a very, very well-run business out of Singapore.
Yeah. Graham, I mean, if you look at that chart, or that's a chart going back to 2018, there, and if you didn't buy Grindrod Shipping shares, you would be kicking yourself now because you think, oh, obvious no-brainer, this one. But it's, nothing is an obvious, ever an obvious no-brainer. Do you think, would you agree with Nick that it hasn't pulled, if you missed the boat, so to speak, would you wait further for a pullback? Or would you would you let that steamer pass you by?
I'd let that capesize slip me by. I think what Nick was saying is absolutely right. If you look at the Baltic Dry, I mean, it was really tight late last year. It's really corrected quite a lot. I think, you know, in my experience, there aren't awfully many very simple businesses. And I think, although at a superficial level, I think it is a simple business, I can't understand it. And I think my problem is that it is very geared to the global economy. You just look at what the Baltic Dry has done, and I think that share price probably tracks the Baltic Dry reasonably closely, although obviously they can lock in rates and so on. But I think on balance of arguments, I try to avoid businesses that are extremely cyclical because I'm not smart enough to pick when those cycles are turning. And yeah, and you trust the management to do that, but truthfully, they have got it wrong in the past, as does everybody. So
yeah.
I think, you know, if that ship has sailed, then just leave it. I think there are really good businesses around. I'm talking both local and internationally, where, you know, you can buy good businesses with reasonably good visibility, attractive multiples, who give you exposure to growing economies, but maybe less volatile or exposed when the economies take a bit of a breather.
Yeah. Okay. What about Naspers and Prosus? And the viewer, and I think this... this is the sort of viewer's perennial concern, and he said, says, is the Naspers Prosus buyback not just propping up their share price, and will the discount not just return when they stop the buyback? I don't know. What do you think, Nick?
Could be. I mean, it's a billion odd rand or thereabouts every day. I mean, you see the SENS announcements at 5 past 5 almost every single day. So I do think to a certain extent, yes, it is. But I mean, that's exactly what Mr. Van Dyk and his team said they would do. They said the market was not recognizing the value in the unlisted entities. It was trading at far too much of a discount to the rump, quote unquote. And they, I don't know, unless you two have seen something different, the buying is open-ended. Don't get in the way. Yes, maybe when they stop, it starts to drop back a bit. But I think this is the first time that in a number of years that management, I think, are starting to get it right and to try do something to get that value back. I'm also not an expert on buybacks and when they stop, etc. But at the moment, it certainly seems to be working. And if you're Naspers and long-suffering Naspers Prosus shareholders like all of us, it's nice to finally see something coming back. And it's doing the job. So yes, to answer the viewer's question, it could drop back again. But for now, I think they've made a determined effort to close that valuation gap. And it's working. It's gone from like 60-odd before they made the announcement, 60-odd percent discount. It's closer to 40 now. So doing the job.
Graham, do you think it is doing the job? I mean, do you think it's a job that will hold for, will have longevity? So in other words, the minute the share repurchases stop, do you think it's going to unwind again? Because that would be some hideous Sisyphean task that Bob has set himself to spend all that money and then see your share price just dwindle back again.
Let me answer the question in a way that I can understand it. And that is, and it's often something that I wouldn't say I take the the companies that trade at deep discounts to NAV to task on. But it, you know, if you are sitting on cash and you're looking to deploy that into investments and you are trading at a 50% discount to your fair value, you know, unless you can find something that is going to deliver spectacular returns with visibility, you know, the best thing they can actually do right now is to buy back. But I think I would say the goal is not simply to, well, I don't think the goal is to actually narrow the discount per se, but to take advantage of the anomaly. So another thing that I found interesting was that Tencent gave them that dispensation to sell, you know, because they were obviously locked up, and I think the Chinese authorities as well giving them the dispensation to sell. So whether I think the discount will remain for a while, but every share they buy back at those deep discounts obviously boosts the NAV of the residue, and I think that's quite important. And I think all we're trying to do here, to take your shipping analogy again, is we're trying to sail through these very choppy waters, and you know, maybe a year from now, once the political conference in China has happened and the dust settles a little bit, and they no longer have their boot on the throat of the Chinese tech sector, then the world could look quite different. So I think they're taking advantage of an opportunity in the market, rather than saying we fundamentally and permanently changing the discount. Yeah. But I think it does. I think anybody who wants to be short this thing must take note of this, and that when the discount is excessive, they do intervene. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, to carry on the boating analogy, I'm not sure if one feels as if one is steering some sort of a rubber dinghy in the wake of a Capesize dry bulk container ship. Okay, I'll stop. I don't know enough shipping terminology. And then the last question before we get to your stock picks. What's the best way to invest in bonds for a tax-free savings account? Or would you just... Yeah, a tax-free savings account, I suppose you're limited by your 36,000 rand a year. Can you invest in RSA retail government bonds through a tax-free savings account? Not sure you can do that.
I think you can, because you can buy, Satrix has got bonds, listed bond instruments. But, you know, my view is always that if you're going to use that exemption, then use it for things that will give you long-term value creation, you know. So, you know, look, bonds... I think the 10-year sitting at 10.5 sounds a hell of a lot more appealing than cash at, say, 6 or whatever. But I think the reality is you want to put assets in there that are really going to give you the benefit of that tax shield.
Okay. Nick, would you share Graham's view?
Yeah, spot on. I actually really like the SA bonds. I've actually been buying them for clients at current levels, the SA 10-year. I'm buying it directly, though. But it's more of a, I guess, it's more of a time frame for clients, 3 to 6 months. So don't forget your tax-free savings, you've got to hold for 5 years. So no, yeah. I wouldn't be holding bonds for 5 years. My duration is far shorter. So yeah, I agree with Graham.
Okay. All right. Well, getting to your stock picks this evening. Nick, sticking with you, what takes your fancy?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's one of these ones when you send the email through in the morning, I'm like, I don't want to buy anything right now. But we've been looking at the hospital and the healthcare sector, and in particular, we've liked Netcare. We noticed with interest the Mediclinic deal that's happening with Remgro, and I think they share our thoughts that these shares are undervalued. So I like the backing of them. Netcare currently sitting, you know, under 15 Rand. It's been there for as long as we can remember. We originally bought into it about a year ago as a business, as Sunlum, just on the back of the ideas that eventually COVID's going to pass, elective surgeries were coming back, and there was deep value in these shares. And it, as far as I can tell, it, certainly those times have passed, but the share price hasn't responded accordingly. And I think there's a little bit of corporate action and a little bit of play in that sector now. So, you know, we own it, so full disclosure, but I actually do quite like it at these levels, around this 15 Rand level.
Okay, cool. Graham, how about you?
Look, I think what Nick is saying is right. You know, it's a very murky time. You sort of feel you don't know what's coming. When you come in on a Monday morning, you sort of think, well, what the hell is going to happen this week? You know, so... But against that backdrop, you know, if you look at look at the South African big banks, all of them, frankly, but I'm going to pick APSA as the pick of the bunch, simply because it is ridiculously cheap. So I think some people might think rising interest rates, you know, massive spike in bad debts, but we always say If in doubt, go and look at the 3-year moving average of the earnings, and you'll see, and you plot that over time, and you plot a, you know, pick a an exit multiple, and you'll find that these shares tend to sort of drift along, like corks on the ocean. So going back to the analogy, but I think the point is that we think that, you know, the divvy yield. So forecast for December of this year is for over 13 bucks of earnings. You're looking at over 20 rands worth. You know, you're buying these things on 8 multiples, great dividend yields. They're well capitalized. I don't think this interest rate cycle is going to hurt the banks awfully much. If anything, I think it'll give them a little bit of margin expansion. So, yeah, I think ABSA, that you can throw Standard Bank into that mix. They're just really cheap. I don't think you're going to go very wrong with this on a 3 to 5 year view.
Okay, let's change the analogy. So it's a cork out of a champagne bottle that you've popped because you did so well out of the stock market this year. Okay, let's think positive. Graham, Nick, we have to leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nice to chat to you both. Nick Kunze is from Sanlam Private Wealth. Graham Koerner is from Koerner Perspective. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening. We'll be right back.